Anna M. Jarvis, who lived from 1864 to 1948, first suggested the natural observance of an annual day honoring all mothers. At a memorial service on May 10th in the year 1908, Miss Jarvis wore a carnation, and she gave a carnation to each person in attendance of her mother's funeral. Well, over the next few years, this started to gain some prominence and began to spread. So on May 9th, 1914, by an act of Congress, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed the second day in May as Mother's Day. He established the day as a time for public quote-unquote, public expression of our love and reverence for the mothers of our country. And by then, it had become customary to wear white carnations to honor departed mothers and red to honor the living. And that custom, I don't know if it continues today or not in some places, but that's how it all got started. But we didn't give you carnations. We gave you a breakfast instead. We have to understand something, church. Mothers, whether they be natural or spiritual, but women in general, are extremely important to the church. Very important to the church. And to show that, I'm going to look at six different women in the Bible and look at their characteristics and talk about them a little bit, and each one of them can be studied a lot deeper to show you the value of women in the church. Obviously, the first one has to be Mary, Mother of Jesus. So, Father, I pray that you would just bless us this morning, that you'd be with us, that you'd encourage us, that you'd strengthen us. I pray, Father, that you watch over us, that you lead us and guide us in all your truth, for you are God and there is no other. I pray, Father, that that which is of me would fall on the floor in front of us, and that which is of you would pierce our hearts. And the church said, Amen. Mary, the mother of Jesus. You know, I'm not going to talk about her much because I talked about her pretty much in depth, in some length, over Christmas time. But she was an amazing woman of faith, of humility, and endurance. I mean, think about this. Think about you're 14, 15 years old, and this angel shows up and says you're pregnant. Excuse me, I only took biology 1, but I know some things. It's impossible. And Jesus said, the angel went, nope, it's got it. And then, think about the gossip. I mean, have you ever thought about the gossip as she's walking around as a single woman? Okay? Think about the fact that while she was pregnant, she rode this donkey. I don't know how far it was, but it was a ways. Think about the fact that her baby was born in this cave or whatever it was, lying in a manger. Think about the fact of just all the things that happened. And think about the fact that if you're a mother, that you're watching your son, your firstborn, get abused, get mocked, get made fun of, get beaten. Now, she wasn't in Puerto Rico. And then crucified. I'd say she had a lot of faith, humility, and endurance. Next one is a woman named Ruth. Amazing woman. She was faithful. She was a loving servant. It says in Ruth 1:1, that the story of Ruth took place in the days when the judges ruled. To really understand Ruth, you need to read the book. It's very long. It's 4 whole chapters. And then reread it. And then reread it. See, Ruth was a Moabite woman whose husband had died, just like her sister-in-law's husband had died, and had left them to live with their mother-in-law, Naomi. Now, Naomi felt like she needed to go back to her home country of Israel. The other daughter said, no, I'm not going to do that. But Ruth clung to her and chose to go to Bethlehem. See, this is where Ruth comes up with that amazing phrase that has been used in many weddings and other places, you know. Wherever you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Your God shall be my God. See, what makes this story of Ruth and Naomi so powerful, is the fact that there was often great hostility between Israel and Moab, right? But Ruth was this amazing woman. She had a vision beyond that. She exhibited faithfulness. She exhibited faith. She exhibited humility. She exhibited unselfishness. She was all about Naomi. She was the scripture before it was written to honor others more so than yourself. It didn't matter what was going on. She was faithful to Naomi through thick and thin, whether it was good or was bad. Her life exhibited that she was more concerned about Naomi than herself. There's joy in that. There really is. See, and one of the ways that she did, she served her. She served Naomi, even to the point that she would go to the field and glean, which basically meant whatever grain was dropped on the ground, after they were done with it, you could pick it up and take it home to eat. See, when things got tough, Naomi didn't run. She stuck it out. She did what she knew was right. And what was her reward? She was married to Boaz, who was not an insignificant person. But not only that, she's the great-grandmother of King David. But not only that, she's listed in Matthew's genealogy of Jesus. It's not bad. A Moabite woman. Next one, about the same time in time, Deborah, who was a prophetess. She was a judge. She was a woman of faith. Let me read six or seven verses out of Judges 4. The Deborah, the wife of Lapidoth, was a prophet who was judging Israel at that time. She would sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites would go to her for judgment. One day she sent for Barak, son of Abinoam, who lived in Kedesh in the land of Naphtali. She said to him, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, commands you. Call out 10,000 warriors from the tribes of Naphtali and Zebulun at Mount Tabor. And I will call out Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, along with his chariots and warriors to the Kishon River. There I will give you victory over him." Listen to Barak's response. Barak told her, "I will go, but only if you go with me." "Very well," she replied, "I will go with you, but you will receive no honor for this venture. For the Lord's victory over Sisera will be at the hands of a woman." So Deborah went with Barak to Kedesh. At Kedesh, Barak called together the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, and 10,000 warriors went up with him. Deborah also went with him. And yes, the Lord routed Sisera. Think about this. Barak wouldn't go up without Deborah. Even though Deborah, who was a judge and a prophetess, spoke to him and said, Barak, however you pronounce his name, do this thing. You'd think he would understand that God would be with him, because it was a judge of the day and a prophetess who was speaking to this. But what, in effect, Barak was doing, he was saying, "I hear you, but I want a sign." And Deborah provided it. And only then did he believe in the power of God. He then marched to the fight, and God gave them the victory over Sisera. Ask yourself this question. Why did he look for a sign? Because he was short of faith. But Deborah provided. Do you see the point there? We go through life and we can often be short of faith. But the person right next to us that God has put us in relationship with, as you're part of a community of believers who walk it out, they walk out relationship, they can stand there and they can be the Aarons and hers for you, the Moses, if you understand what I'm saying, that would encourage you, that will give you faith to go forward in what God has called you to do. And that's what Deborah did. She stirred up Barak's faith. And then Barak, who had been too timid to fight, turned him into a courageous man of faith that won in battle, though he got no glory for it. Deborah the prophetess spoke God's courage and faith into Barak. See, here's the thing about Deborah. She wasn't timid. Which can be a weakness among Christians. Now hear me out. Modesty is beautiful. Humility is beautiful. It's important. But we must not allow modesty and humility to degenerate to timidity. And a synonym for timidity and what it means is cowardice. It is well to be humble. It is well to be modest. It is well to be a person who understands who they are. But it's never well to be weakly fearful. That's W-E-A-K-L-Y. So what's a sure cure for timidity? Faith. Faith in God. Faith in His Word. Faith in His truth. Faith in the fact that He will always be there with us. It was so wonderful what Hannah was sharing, that with us in every situation, that He never leaves us. He never forsakes us. He's always right there. And to think otherwise is to basically call Him a liar. Whoa. Don't say that. But it's true, because it's in His Word. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I will never turn my back on you. I've always got my back. That's my translation. But faith in these things shakes off timidity. It shakes off cowardice. It causes us to walk forth in bravery. That is what Deborah, the woman of God, passed on to Barak. Next one is Esther. Queen and servant. A woman of faith and courage. She was raised by her uncle Mordecai. And there's 10 chapters in this book, so it's a little bit longer, but it's a great book to read over and over and over again. Mordecai had a plan because of something evil that Haman was doing, and this led her to being chosen as a queen by Xerxes. There's a bunch of steps in there. I'm not going to go through them all. Who did not know that Esther was Jewish. But because Esther found favor with Xerxes, King Xerxes, there was a great slaughter of the Jews that Haman, who was Xerxes' right-hand person, and orchestrated was stopped, with the Jews being allowed instead to destroy those who were going to kill them. And in addition, Haman, who had built gallows for Mordecai, was hung on the gallows. See, if you're brave in the faith and walk forth, God will turn it around. And today, the Jewish holiday of Purim commemorates the events outlined in the book of Esther. See, Esther's a powerful book. Yet it's interesting because it never mentions God. There's only two books in the Bible, just fun facts to know, that don't mention God. Esther and Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs, as it's listed in some Bibles. Maybe that's why those were the last two books to be canonized into the 66 books of the Bible. God placed Esther in a strategic place amongst her people, just like he places people in strategic positions to perform extraordinary tasks today. Remember what I said last week? He doesn't call the equipped, he equips the call. God will equip those of us today who are called to do things for him, which is everybody, just like he did with Esther. We have to have faith that God is always with us. We have to have faith that God's taking care of us. We have to have faith that God is leading us. We have to have faith that he's right there strengthening us. And she understood that after praying and fasting, Esther was strengthened by her God to the point where she went in before the king. Now, you have to understand, you didn't go before the king unless you were called. And if you did go in and he didn't extend his golden scepter, you were in a world of hurt. But she knew that she was supposed to go in. And it was probably with a little bit of fright. But she overcame that with faith because of the prayer and everything that had gone on, and fasting had gone on, and gathered the courage that God gave her and went into his presence. And he extended the golden scepter and then granted Esther her wish. Now, her wish was for a banquet. A banquet where Haman thought he was going to get honored, but it turned to be not so good for him. Because the plot that Haman had done against the Jews was exposed, which led to him being hung. Esther was not passive. There is nowhere in the Bible that I've ever seen, and if there is, tell me about it, where God calls his people to be passive. God always calls his people to be active, to be courageous, to be brave, to go forward. See, she was active. She chose to do what Mordecai had asked her to do, to do what God had asked her to do. She was active in prayer. She asked others to pray and fast. Then she was active in walking it out and then doing what God had equipped her to do. Mary Magdalene. Anybody here watching The Chosen Season 2? Number 4 comes out on Tuesday night. Magdalene, I love her. She's one of the favorite. The fact that she's called Mary Magdalene probably is because she came from, probably, not 100% sure, that she came from the village of Magdala. She has been called one of the most brave and appealing women in the New Testament, in the Bible, due to her apparent turnaround. According to tradition, it's not in the Bible, but according to tradition, she was a prostitute. But she got saved. In the Bible, she is described as one of Jesus' female followers. And when you watch The Chosen, she's right there in the group. And it's just really cool how she's portrayed. She also was exorcised of 7 demons, as you see in Luke 8. But then you look at her life. I don't know of anybody in the Bible that express a greater depth of thanksgiving for Jesus, for how he had freed her and how he had saved her. See, she, when he was crucified and the body was taken down, she followed the body to the tomb, to its burial place. She was one of the first ones to visit the tomb just after he had risen. And one of the first ones to learn that Jesus had risen. If you read chapter 20 of John's Gospel, there's this absolutely amazing and touching story of Mary going into Jesus' tomb, finding it empty, then encountering Jesus himself. It wasn't one of his disciples who had scattered. It was Mary Magdalene. And then she went and told the disciples, as is recorded in John 20:18, I have seen the Lord. See, Mary Magdalene understood her salvation. She understood who she had been. She understood who she was after salvation. And she understood that it was infinitely apart. I often think, I'm not being judgmental here, but I think it would be really good if people really understood how lost they were. It's not like that little poster that only has you about that far apart from Jesus. He was infinitely that way. You were infinitely that way. Your righteousness was as filthy rags. And he saved you. And now your righteousness is as Christ. We were lost. We were lost. But now we're saved. And he's always with us. Man, that should make you just want to get up and run around the room. Mary Magdalene was eternally grateful because she had a vision that I just outlined. She was eternally grateful and she was passionate for Jesus because she understood what he did for her, that there was no way she could do it herself. But she did it. It's amazing. And another one that's right up there with Mary Magdalene is Mary of Bethany. She was a worshiper. And she wasn't a lover. She was an extravagant lover. She knew how to love Jesus. John 12:3 in the Christian Standard Bible. Then Mary took a pound of perfume, pure and expensive nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped his feet with her hair, so the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Now, you have to understand something about this nard. It grew in the high pastures of Himalayas, somewhere between Tibet and India. And what they had to do is they had to take camels and go over there. And it took many, many days to get there and then to bring it back through these high mountain passes. No wonder it was quite expensive. I took this out of William Hendrickson's commentary on John. Just listen to this. This is so profound and so mind-blowing. One can picture the scene. Her heart overflowing with love and gratitude for her Lord. Mary has occupied the position behind Jesus as the guests, according to Oriental custom, are reclining on couches arranged in inverted U-shaped fashion around a low table. Suddenly, she breaks the jar, which she is holding in her hand, and she pours its sweet-smelling contents over Jesus. According to Matthew and Mark, she pours it upon his head. And according to John, she anoints his feet. There's no conflict here, for Matthew and Mark clearly indicate that the ointment is poured over the body of Christ. Evidently, there was enough for the entire body, head, neck, shoulders, and even for the feet, and in complete disregard of Oriental rules of propriety, which viewed with definite disfavor, the action of a woman who would loosen her tresses in the presence of men. Wow. Mary, allowing her heart to speak freely, not only unbinds her hair, but worse even from the point of view of the Oriental customs, a mount with her hair wipes his feet. Clearly, even the feet are covered with a mount of ointment so abundant that they have to be dry. A pound of ointment is an exceptional large quantity. And Mary, having broken the jar, pours out all of this upon Jesus. She emptied the entire content of the alabaster cruse. Why'd she do this? Impossible. Ask, why'd she do this? We could have fed the poor with it. We could have done this. We could have done that. We could have stole it, which was the real reason. Because she loved Jesus totally, completely, openly, to the point that she was willing to break Oriental customs of the day and do what she did. Because she didn't care about what man thought. She only cared about what she was able to do with Jesus. So we're to worship him that way. She loved Jesus. She understood who he was. She understood what he did for her. And so she wanted to show her love to him. So she anointed him and worshiped him extravagantly, just as we are to do. Can somebody let them know downstairs we're almost done and go next door and let Michelle know that we're almost done? But don't leave, because we're going to do something for the women here in a few moments. Was she just going downstairs with somebody going next door? Josh, do you mind running next door and just telling Michelle? Thank you. These six women, Mary, the mother of Jesus, Ruth, Esther, Naomi, Mary Magdalene, and Mary of Bethany. They are amazing examples of godly women. But not just of godly women, they were amazing examples of godly people. They were brave, obedient, wise, proven leaders, full of faith, servants, worshipers, devoted, thankful. They were prayers, they were faithful, they were lovers, they were humble. They were passionate followers of God and Jesus, who endured much. See, these women were not content with mediocrity, with remaining who they started out as. They wanted more. They wanted more of Jesus. They wanted to be able to walk out their entire call. They knew that he would equip those who had been called, and were all called. They all wanted more. They all wanted to be in the presence of God. They all wanted to be in Jesus. They understood who God was. They wanted to worship him just because of who he was. Because he was worthy of worship. They wanted to praise him for all the things that he had done for them. Therefore, the word passive was not in their vocabulary. Only the word active in their faith. But see, these six women weren't the only women that the Bible lists. There was Sarah. There was Rebecca. There was Rachel, Miriam, Hannah, Elizabeth, Priscilla, Rahab, Martha, Lydia, and many more. In fact, there's 160 different women listed in the Bible. Many of these women were mightily used in the building of the kingdom and the building of the church. It irritates me to no extent when I hear somebody in the church say, men do this and women sit over there. Chris and I went to a conference once when, in the early days of starting this place, going, God, who do you want us to be connected with? Doing, you know, blah, 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 blah. And we went to this place, and we walked in the front door of this conference, and this male walked toward us and stuck his hand out, and I think you stuck your hand out to shake, and he totally ignored her. And then some woman came out of the side over here and took her over to the side. I should have been the man, and we should have just walked out. but we stuck around because I had great respect for the leader of this group of people. I had met him and so forth. Women are important. Here at CFJC, as well as the Universal Church, women like these are needed for it to attain in all that God has for them. And I'm glad to say we've got some here. And that there's more coming. So, guys, can you do me a favor? Stand up. Just the guys. We'll wait for a second. Have a seat, Michelle.
Anywhere.
Well, a chair preferred. Or if you want to sit on the floor, that's fine. Okay. We are going to give these women a standing ovation. Thank you. And thank you for where God's taken you. And now, we're going to pray for you. So can the women just come up here? Just stand in line.